Okay. Good morning, everybody, again. Let's take a moment to get ourselves grounded and centered. A couple of deep breaths. Let the external world take care of itself for a while. Notice how our hearts and our souls and our minds are dedicated to a sense of awareness, sense of truth, sense of stillness, sense of joy, sense of gratitude, sense of willingness to be open, to transform, to see beyond the material world, to see with new eyes, to hear with new ears, that we don't just take to yesterday's news into today. We allow ourselves to be dedicated to truth, to light, to love, to joy, that we are determined to see ourselves and to see others as the truth of who they are. So, good morning again. I guess because Margot and I have been on the road for the last couple of days, seems like it's been a long time since we did this Sunday class, but it wasn't just a week ago. We're on page 19. And I'm going to begin by in around the middle of the page. If you don't have a book, that's okay because we read it out loud anyway. Just if you have a book, I like to underline stuff, put little notes in the margin, whatever. That's just me. And I like something solid to hold on to. The guides are saying this. Your ideas of who you should be are meritful in some ways. See, that's one of the things I really love about these books is it doesn't throw anything out and say, well, don't do that anymore. That's wrong. That's bad. It finds a purpose or a goodness in everything that comes up. Your ideas of who you should be, which we know are not true, but they are meritful in some ways. Oh, I have to throw it away. Don't have to blame us. Well, you shouldn't should yourself. You should stop thinking about who you think you are. Your ideas of who you should be are meritful in some ways. I should be a nice man, a nice woman, and do good things. I should be a happy woman and give myself joy so that I may share it with others. These are fine in their own ways. But understand, friends, the joy that you seek is a state of being, being in joy. And the claim of being kind is actually replaced by recognition of truth, of the deep love of God for all its creations. The difference between, which we've emphasized a number of times before, difference between an idea and an experience. The idea is that I would like to be a good person who brings joy into other people's lives. There's nothing wrong with that. It's fine. In fact, don't throw it away. However, if you want to make that the essence of your being, the essence of your being is being connected and being aligned to a higher power, to a divine consciousness, to being aligned to the truth of who you are. It's not just something that you do. It's not just something that you have. It's not just something that you act out of. It is the truth of who you are. So instead of being wishful thinking that I want to be a nice person and bring joy into other people's lives, I want to be aligned to the divine spirit so that not only am I bringing joy into people's lives, but I am bringing joy into my own. And I'm opening myself. Anything that I do for myself, I do for everyone and everybody else. So it's not just an isolated act of God, kindness or goodness or joy or peacefulness. It is a state of being. I'm sure you know some people in your life that you just enjoy being around. You don't have to be doing anything. Kind of like Robert Frost said, a friend is someone I can walk a mile with without saying a word. I just enjoy being with them. Actually, my grandson Finn's like that. We don't say a lot together. We don't have to. We enjoy being with one another, sharing our being with one another. Understand this, friends. The joy that you seek is a state of being. Being in joy, and the claim of being kind is actually replaced by recognition of truth of the deep love of God for all of its creations. When you have aligned in the upper room, you have no need to be nice or to try to be kind. You are not efforting good manners. You are being at the level of amplitude where the transmission you hold cannot judge and does not fear. Those pieces of negativity simply do not exist. The consequence is simple. You see truth. You see the struggle of the one before you. You do not judge her for her struggle. You claim the truth of her being through the resonance you hold. It's very easy in the world that we live in today, for me it is anyway, to judge people. Even judge their struggle. Ah, I see you struggling. What I don't realize is the reason why I see you're struggling is because I see my own. I can't see in you what I don't see inside myself. So we want to twist that around a little bit to become aware that whatever I see in you is something that's going on with me. Oh, I again, on a superficial level, I can honor your struggle because I know what it's like to struggle. But the reality is that I want to be able to see you, truly see you beyond your struggle. Or beneath your struggle or above your struggle. Because that's how I, that the only part of, I don't want to put this. I can only see you beyond your struggle if I see myself beyond my struggle. Now I will be aware of both states of mind. I will be aware of my own struggle and I'll be aware of yours. But I will also realize that it's not a definition of who I am, nor is it a definition of who you are.
Gary.
I see your struggle and I see beyond your struggle. Yes.
Hi, Gary. Yeah, that what you just talked about then really clarified something for me. As what you see out there is within you, or you wouldn't see it. And for some time now, I've really been pondering that because there are some instances where I think, I think I don't act like that. And as I'm looking on at different things and getting and now when something you said, I see that those are all qual I don't know if I should say qualities, but attributes within us that are capable of coming out, have been out at some time, maybe not at this moment, what we're seeing maybe at this moment, but they're capable of being within us and coming out. Does that
Okay.
sound logical?
Sure. I guess another way I might put that, Paula, and you can see if this resonates with you as well, is, oh, that's your trip. This is mine. Interesting you chose that one. Interesting you chose that piece to be afraid of or that piece to grab your attention. Here's what's grabbing my attention right now.
I
Is
like
that
that.
the same? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Jerry. Thanks.
So I'm removing judgment from the picture, and I'm what I need, what I probably re also really need to say is that here's how I perceive your journey through what you were doing or what you were saying or how you were acting. I'm not sure whether that's even true or not. That's the best I can do, though. But I also want to perceive you beyond that piece of the journey that is tripping you up or getting in your way at this moment. Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, I just want to kind of make it practical for me. So if I observe or see annoyance, manipulation, control in someone, and it affects me, does that possibly mean that there's annoyance and manipulation going on that hasn't been healed?
Say that again.
Okay, if I see annoyance and manipulation and control in someone, and it really just annoys me, I'm wondering if that annoyance, that manipulation, is something within Jim that hasn't been healed.
It's a very thin line that we walk with that. Okay. Let's put it this way, or I'm putting it my way, or the best I can do with it. We all desire to be healed. We all desire to be whole. Because we are not completely, let me start from the beginning. You're probably going to be sorry you started me up. Let's suppose we take a look in a very, I was going to say, general way. One of my teachers puts it this way. She says, Planet Earth is the classroom of unconditional love. That's the learning. The learning experience. And that the ultimate learning experience here on planet Earth is to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. And once you do that, it's like you graduate to the next, whatever the next level is. And of course, you can't even imagine what that is because you're still stuck on this one, right? Now, the mind wants to know what's next? And God says, you're not finished with this one yet. So when I speak about someone else's, or observe what I think is someone else's woundedness, or someone else's imperfection, or someone else's struggle. What I need to be able to do is realize, yes, that's there. But what about my struggle? What about my imperfection? The only reason why I can see that in you is because I see it in myself. That's sort of the turnaround. And I recognize that Let me give you another example of that. One that caught me up a while ago was A Course in Miracles says, and I'm paraphrasing close as I can with this, that every human interaction is either an act of love or a cry for help. And I can remember after I quoted that, I went on to look at another example of that saying, ah, here's my brother or sister who's in trouble. They're crying out for help. And there was a very enlightened student of the course who was in that class. She kind of raised her hand and said, just a minute. If you are looking at someone else in your life as being or calling out for help, where is that call for help really coming from? She said, you could not recognize that unless you were calling out for help for yourself.
Ooh.
And I went, oops.
That is perfect.
Ooh.
Yes, Jerry, that just how that was worded just hit the
Okay.
heart within me.
Jerry, can I add something that for me makes it easier to interact with them? Is that when I recognize that their cries for help are actually gifts to me.
Because we are one. My cry for help is also your cry for help. See, you can extend this equation beyond the little self and say, yes, my observation of your cry for help is really mine because we are the same. Ah, that changes the whole equation again. We are all one.
That takes I love that, man. That takes a certain level of awareness on my part, as opposed to just I'm just like, that's not me, and I'm just deflecting. Because I love what Matt said in terms of, okay, that's really very clear. But if Jim's not aware, that's not me. That's them. That's their stuff.
Right. So as soon as I say it's not me, I can be rest assured that it is, all right? Oh, that's not my stuff. That's not me. I would never dot dot dot.
Gary.
Yeah, Linda.
Okay.
Oh, 19. Towards the bottom of that page, what kind of gave us this jumping off point. When you are not operating in judgment or fear, the consequence is simple. You see truth. You see the struggle of the one before you. You do not judge her for her struggle. You can't claim the truth of her being through the resonance you hold. I see you, I desire to see you beyond your struggle. Because your struggle is not who you are. You might be defining yourself in terms of your struggle in this moment. I understand that because I do the same thing. But what I want to avoid or not get too much trouble with is I want to be able to see you for the truth of who you are. And the truth of who you are is not your struggle. Truth of who you are is that aspect of self that is beyond struggle. The aspect of self that lives in non-judgment, that lives in non-fear. You claim the truth of her being through the resonance you hold. The higher my resonance, the higher my vibration, the higher vibration I can see you in. And so I can notice that when I'm feeling pretty crappy, my vision of you is probably going to be pretty crappy as well. And my awareness is going to be pretty self-centered. Somebody put it this way, which, and it was in a book, I think it was called Shortcut Through Therapy. Richard Carlson, the guy who wrote the book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and It's All Small Stuff. Yeah. And then he wrote another book called There's Also Some Big Stuff. All right. But he wrote a wonderful book that I have never heard anybody talk about too much. It's called Shortcut Through Therapy. It's excellent. Spiritual healing. I'm not saying run out and buy it. Like, actually, if you could grasp what was said just on this page, you would need to go out and you would need another book. But what he said was this. The sentence really stayed with me. When I am in a down state of mind, my vision becomes distorted. When I am in a down state of mind, my vision becomes distorted of myself, of you, of the world in general. So my favorite example of that is when we were living in our first home, we had a attached garage. And there was this one spot in the garage when I would drive in, it was a crack in the drywall. Some days I would say, well, there's a crack in the drywall. I need to get that fixed sometime. When I was in a down state of mind or depressed or angry or judgmental, I would look at that, and 5 minutes later in my mind, the whole house was falling down. I noticed that. I noticed the difference in my state of mind made the world of difference about that little crack in the drywall. Some days it was just a little crack in the drywall. Other days it was a disaster.
So Jerry, it's kind of like that's a crack in our perception.
Yeah, right.
So Jerry, man, that right there, to me, that's a huge spiritual nugget. So if I haven't centered myself before going out to do errands or whatever, then that something happens and it takes me into this lower vibration, and I'm susceptible to going to that proverbial rabbit hole.
It's and again, to come back to a very piece of common terminology that we've used here a lot, right? Being aware, being awake. When I am awake and when I am aware, my vision of myself, my vision of you, my vision of the world is totally different from what it might be when I am in self-centeredness. Now, the key operative here is once I realize that I've been lost in self-centeredness, is not to beat myself up for being lost, but to become aware that, to become grateful that I'm back in awareness again. So we do things like Sunday morning, Tuesday night, your meditation time, whatever it might happen to be. We do those time not to do something that we're supposed to be doing, but to remind us of the truth of who we are. So it's really interesting. I come walking in here on Sunday morning and I leave my stuff at the door. It's like there's a coat rack there that I hang my scary cape, my judgmental thoughts. I hang them and I come walking in here and literally, there are some days when I can literally feel that difference. I might not even be aware that I'm doing that, because we've been dedicated to this work in some way or another, that's exactly what we do. We don't bring our stuff in here. But it's what's also amazing is you walk out of here and you sort of pick it up again. So let's suppose that let's suppose I say to myself, I'd rather be home resting because I'm tired of driving and I'm tired of this and I'm tired of that. It's been a stressful week. and I come in here and I forget all about that idea. I'm very, very present, very, very locked in to people who are here physically present and people who are here online. I'm very locked into that one. So I'm not thinking about any of that stuff that was going on before I walked in, but I will guarantee you almost. I walk out of this door and it's like, oh God, I got another hour to wait. Oh, I know we got the energy workers. I got another hour and a half to wait. And I will do that, and I will not even be aware that I am unaware. Unless something happens and remind me, going, oops. And again, it's so easy to flip that into judgment, self-judgment of saying. But what I want to be able to do is go, oops, take a couple of deep breaths. How can I be present to those around me in this moment? I might not get a direct answer to that, but I am open to whatever that answer might happen to be. Does it open my heart or does it close my heart? Does this thought that I'm planning, this action that I'm planning, this thought that I'm having, does it open my heart or close? And I can choose that no matter how I feel. I still might feel like I want to be someplace else. That's my humanness talking. But at the same time, I can still choose, no matter how I feel, I can choose to keep my heart open to what is in this moment. Whether it's somebody else talking, whether it's somebody else preaching, whether it's somebody else singing, whether it's somebody else doing energy work, I can choose. I can choose, no matter how I feel, I can choose to be actively and lovingly involved in the process, no matter what's going on with me emotionally.
There was key that is that there is a concerted mindful effort of being aware, because if I'm not that, and if I came into, if I were given a workshop, for a spiritual workshop, I may be what has already happened, and I may be in like what's going to happen, but I'm not present. And then that, and then that quote unquote spiritual workshop is just gonna like, because that energy is so like, who are you, man?
Yeah. There's a famous Zen story about a student who was going to visit his master. And he knew at this, because he had been through all these different exercises in mindfulness training. And he knew one of the things that was going to happen when he had this last class with his master was going to bless him and raise his vibration to masterhood so that he could attract his own students. And he was very excited about this because he had spent 7 years under the tutelage of this master. I was very, very thankful of that. And so he came to the master's house, took his sandals off before he walked in there, and walked in. And the master was making tea, which again was fairly typical for a Zen master to do. Poured the cup of tea and passed it to his student. And he said, "Before I give you my blessing as becoming a master, which side of the door did you leave your sandals at? The right side or the left side?" Silence. "I don't remember." "You have 7 more years of study." Listen to this. Bottom of page 19. "Now, in prior instruction, you are taught to state the claim, 'I know who you are in truth. I know what you are in truth. I know how you serve in truth. You are free, you are free, you are free.' And this is always appropriate. But at the level of alignment you are coming to, You are moving into expression as the monad, as the oneness. In other words, friends, the truth of your being is transmitted by being. As we started off this morning, there are some people in your life that you simply enjoy being with or being around. It's not what they're doing, it's not what they're saying, it's not what they've done, it's not what they're going to do. It's being with them, being in the state of being together with them is blessing enough. In other words, friends, the truth of your being is transmitted by being, not doing anything. Not because, as we quoted Robert Frost, a friend is someone I can walk a mile with without saying a word. I am in my being with this other person. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to say anything. We don't have to do anything different. We don't have to pretend. We don't have to do anything at all except walking beside this other human being and being in that state of consciousness that I am with you. That's what Jesus meant when he said, "Behold, I am with you all days, even to the end of the world." My beingness, my Christ consciousness is always here for you. Even when you forget, you can forget it. Your forgetfulness does not get in the way of the Christ consciousness that is already here. It can't. The statement of expression, "I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve," is who you are. So you are no longer required to state it.
Wow.
And because you hold this, the co-resonance of your field is a blessing to all you encounter. A blessing to all you encounter. Can you imagine that? If we could just realize that for a split second. That the beingness, the goodness, the light, the gentleness, the kindness, the joyfulness, that is the truth of who you are, touches everyone and everything, is a blessing to all you encounter. And what we are being asked to do, or what it suggests that we do, is, can I hold that in truth when I walk into the grocery store? Can I recognize that the field of my being is a blessing to all I encounter?
Hey, Jared, what I'm...
Need you to speak up a little bit more so we can pick up.
Awesome. My charge is that, you know, what you just said, you know, if I'm out and about, you know, just in the world, running errands and doing things of that nature, you know, I've been really wanting to be able to see the love of Christ in someone first, leading in with that, as opposed to the personality self that may be out picturing, whatever it is. And then so, you know, my intention is to be that. And then I ask myself, Jim, are you in discernment? Are you in judgment? And it's just, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it almost feels like for me, when I'm walking out, I have to be, I'm aware. But it's like I'm kind of feeling that, okay, is someone going to do harm to me? And so that kind of gets in the way of me seeing the crisis. If that makes sense.
Hang on a second. Let me get, not sure why this popped up here. Let me take care of this and I'll answer your question, Joe, and then we'll do our meditation. The outside world was interfering with our. What about me? What about...
I'm still here.
I'm waiting in the wings. As soon as you leave this room, you can pick me up again.
My turn.
Jim, this is not really it's more of a comment on what you said. See if I can put this in words. When Jesus asked the Roman centurion if he believed, do you believe I can heal your servant? And he said this marvelous, marvelous piece. Yes, Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. My intention is, my openness is to the best of my being, I am open to believing that you can heal my servant. But I know maybe after a while I could do better. But so it's not about pulling out a yardstick and measuring my intention thing. I know in this moment of time I am doing the best I possibly can do. And I know that's acceptable. My grace is sufficient for you. So don't try to say, well, I'm almost there, I'm not quite there yet. Stop. My intention is to be the most loving as I can be in this particular moment, and that's my truth.
Okay.
And I know whatever seems to be missing will be taken care of by my divine consciousness. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. And take a couple of breaths, deep breaths. It's interesting as I'm sitting here with you, my eyes closed, breathing steady, open to truth. Is I'm experiencing myself as being cleansed. I'm not going to try to explain that anymore, just the truth. So as you're sitting there with your eyes closed, breathing, resting in the spaciousness that you've created, with your heart open, how can I bless the world today? How can I be a blessing to the world today? And just rest with those questions. You don't have to answer them right away. They are being answered already, but let the questions themselves find a way into your heart. And be at peace. No force, no judgment, no have-tos. That the experience of the answers to those questions will come to you exactly when they are needed. And so with the sense of love, gratitude, willingness, get back in touch with the rhythm of your breathing, the rhythm of your heartbeat. Stretch a bit and open your eyes when you're ready.
Thank you so much, Jerry, for your the added insights that I've had today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paula, for being here. Thank you all for being here. Hope you have a great week. Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry. Thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jerry.
Great meeting.
Good job, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Great job, Jerry.